It's Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg, 720 WGN.
And we open with the strains of a well-known Yiddish melody, Roshenkes mit Mandeln. It's kind of a lullaby about raisins and almonds, which we're going to give to the kid who's now in his crib. That has no direct relevance for what we're talking about tonight, except it's a well-known Yiddish song. And we're talking about the greatest of all the modern Yiddish authors. By modern, I don't mean that he's still around. He's not. But Joseph Dorman brings him back to life in a fine new documentary film titled Sholem Aleichem, Laughing in the Darkness. Instantly, let us tell all who are listening who Sholem Aleichem was, apart from his being somehow the man behind, or so they say, Fiddler on the Roof.
Well, thanks for having me. You know, that's probably the best question one can ask about Sholem Aleichem, because I have to confess, I worked on this project for 10 years, and when I began it, I knew nothing about Sholem Aleichem, and I thought of him, what I knew of him was through Fiddler on the Roof. And he was a name. I remember my parents had one of his books on the bookshelf, The Tevye Stories. I don't remember anyone in my household ever touching that book, but we had it, like so many families. And I thought of him as a kind of dusty Jewish humorist of the past. And when a friend of mine, a man named Jeffrey Chandler, who's a professor of Yiddish, suggested I make a film on Sholem Aleichem when I was desperately looking for a project, I sort of thought, well, I'll check him out. And what I discovered was perhaps the greatest Jewish writer of the modern era. And when I say that, what I mean is that there are many fine Jewish writers, obviously Philip Roth, Saul Bellow, you can name many.
But they write in English.
They write in English. Sholem Aleichem wrote in Yiddish. And he was really a national author. He was a man who wrote about the Jewish soul and about Jewish identity and about the very essence of Jewishness. So he really is fundamental even today to understanding who we are.
Somebody has referred to him as the Yiddish Mark Twain. Is that fair?
You know, in a very loose way, it's a nice way to get a grip on who he is for people who don't know who he is. And the reason it kind of works is two reasons. One is that he had a pen name like Mark Twain. His real name was Sholem Rabinovich. And the other thing that's important was because he was a sophisticated writer like Mark Twain, who was trying to reach an unsophisticated audience. Sholem Aleichem's audience were not illiterate, but they were uneducated. He created a persona around himself and also used essentially street language to write about and for common people, much like Mark Twain did.
And his stories were all about, virtually all of them, about Jews in the old world or Jews in the new world.
That's right. They were both in the old and new world. Yes, absolutely.
And many of them were done in the form in which a particular person, including Tevye, the milkman, are writing to Sholem Aleichem.
Talking, actually, to Sholem Aleichem.
Talking to him.
His best stories, what he excelled at was the monologue form.
Yeah.
And he knew that's what he hit on, and where his talents really excelled was revealing people and common people through their speech, through language. And as someone said, you know, what is the subject of Jewishness? It really is language, speech. We're speech-driven people.
Therefore, this is the moment when we should listen to a Sholem Aleichem story in Yiddish. Most of our listeners do not know the language, and we're not going to play much of it, but just a minute or so to get the feel, the heft of the Yiddish language as used by Sholem Aleichem.
Sounds great.
Here is the Sarah Blocher Retter, whom I don't know, but her Yiddish is quite good and quite classical, I would say. It's Ashkenazic Yiddish. And she is reading the story, Reb Moshe, Rabbi Moshe.
Men is sich moichel von Sholem Aleichem. A kurze Hagdome. Zwischen die verschiedene Typen, was das jiddische Leben gibt, arroz, gefinden sich a selche, was halten beim Awegehen, wo starben ob. Molen lebedicke Menschen is a teinig. Verschreiben die Typen, wo starben ob, is a mitzwe. Sie beten sich, molt uns, was schreibt uns, lo mir nicht vergessen werden von dem kommendicken Dor. Reb Moshe Velvel Balagole. Der, was meint, als ein Balagole ist ein Mensch, was keiner ist nicht mehr ruhig zu leiden von ihm, Gole ist, hat er das. Reb Moshe Velvel Balagole ist nicht gleich zu allen anderen Balagoles. Der Name allein, Reb Moshe Velvel, sagt schon genug. Und er sagt, dass er sich auf jeden Fall ist, und er sagt, was darfst du.
This is a story, she says. And as she is introducing it, then she begins reading from Shalom Aleichem. It's a story about Reb Moshe Balagola. Reb is just honorific. It's something you call a decent man. He's not really a rabbi. And he's a balagola. Do you know what is a balagola?
I don't know what a balagola is.
Well, it's a kind of a laborer. It's a kind. It's a man who... It's not a person of high education, but a decent fellow. And she goes on. But there's the sound of Yiddish.
Yeah.
That's a heavily Hebraicized Yiddish, actually. Many of the words in there are from Hebrew, though Yiddish, of course, basically, as you well know, is a Germanic language in its structure and in its simplest vocabulary.
Yeah, Yiddish was is a mixture of Hebrew and German, as you point out, and Slavic languages. As the Jews moved east, it picked up Slavic words and Slavic locutions. And now in America, of course, when the Hasidim speak, it has picked up English.
Sure,
it's a language that is very flexible and attracts to itself the languages of the countries in which it lives and grows.
We had relatives who came from France during the war. When I was a little kid, they arrived as refugees. And they sat in our living room in Brooklyn on a hot summer's day, their first day in America. And my aunt, whom I came to love as I came to know her, said it was a very hot day. She said, Efshemeken dot effenin di fenetchele. Maybe there, could you please open the window? But for her, window was French. Fenêtre, reduced, diminutified.
Right.
That's about the language of Yiddish. If Sholem Aleichem had been translated, of course he has been translated in later life, but during his life he essentially published in newspapers, in magazines, and of course some of them were put into book form, but he was not readily translated into the other Indo-European languages.
You know, during his lifetime, that's an interesting question. I don't think he was. I think he was primarily writing for a Jewish audience.
Later in life, he was translated among others by, say, Saul Bellow.
That's right. Saul Bellow and other, the names don't come to mind readily, but a number of people translated Sholem Aleichem.
Now, you've read most of the stories.
I've read quite a number of them. Yes, I have.
So tell me one of your favorite stories and why.
You know, I think, obviously, everyone loves the Tevye stories. I think that among my favorite stories are a series called The Railway Stories.
Mm-hmm.
And the railway stories, as the name implies, take place on a train. They're actually, most of the stories are supposedly recorded by Sholem Aleichem. This is recorded by a so-called commercial traveler, a traveling salesman. But these stories, which were written later in life and are very Chekhovian and all take place on trains, are about, really, they're somber stories, but extremely funny. And a lot of them are about confusions of Jewish identity. One of them is a great story called Third Class, in which the man talks about why you shouldn't go first class or second class. First class is completely sterile. Second class, everybody wants to talk to one another but can't really. They have to keep up proprieties. But in third class, everyone talks. And he compares that, the Hamish talkativeness, the communal aspect of Jewish life at the bottom of the ladder, with the appearances, the airs of what happens in the second and third class. And what happens in second class is a wonderful little anecdote about, he sees a young man and a woman flirting with one another, clearly not Jewish, and they're chatting and stuff, and he sees them flirting, etc. And all of a sudden, so a man comes through the car and says hello to the young man and gives him greetings from his friend Reb Moshe. So all of a sudden, the young man is unmasked as a Jew in front of this young Gentile woman he's trying to flirt with, right? So he gets terribly embarrassed. He stammers, turns red, and the minute the train stops at the next station, he exits quickly. And then the train goes on, of course. And then a couple stations later, the young woman gets off and is greeted by her family. So who is her family? A bunch of Jews.
Yeah.
So here are a couple of people confusing one another, confused about themselves, trying to fool one another. And it was those confusions of identity and Jewishness, which he was really lampooning and exploring at that moment.
But he's also reflecting on and reporting on transformations in Yiddish culture. He's really reporting on the Haskalah,
The assimilation, the slow assimilation that was beginning of Jews into the larger
society. Which became possible only because the governments of Eastern Europe began to yield somewhat and allowed for some Jewish entry into out of the ghetto and into the general national life.
That's right. I mean, I think it was two forces. It was the fact that the larger world was opening up, and at the same time, within the Jewish world, young men and women were eager for secular knowledge.
And
so
also,
those forces were going both ways.
And something we certainly get in the Tebbia stories, and they make much of it in the original play as it was done on the Yiddish theater stage, and then, of course, in the film, is the disaffection from Jewish life and the abandonment of Jewish life by at least one of Tebbia's daughters. Really, two of them. One becomes a radical and goes off to be a communist.
Right.
And the other marries
A Gentile. Yeah, yeah. Well, he was looking at the dissolution of East European Jewish culture, and that happened through many, many forces. Yeah, absolutely.
We must come to Tevye de Milchige, Tevye the dairyman or the milkman, right after we pause for a round of commercials, which are only 5 minutes late.
It's Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg, 720 WGN.
And we are hearing yet another classic Yiddish song. This one is My Yiddish Mama. And God knows Yiddish Mamas are very important in Shalom Aleichem stories.
Absolutely. He works a lot with the relationships between men and women and the disconnections between men and women. But his women's voices are very strong and powerful. You almost might say he's an early proto-feminist in some ways.
We've got a scene. I tell Krista in the booth to go to number one, which is on our playlist. This is a scene from the film made of Tevye, the Milkman, a film in which Maurice Schwartz, a great Yiddish language actor, whom I saw as a kid in New York on Second Avenue while the Yiddish theater still was alive. Maybe it was having its last gasp, but it still persisted. And he made a film in 1939, as you know.
That's correct. It was based on a 1919 stage play that had been very successful on Tevye.
And here's a little bit more of the sound of Yiddish. What happens here is a Tevye who has one cow, bought a horse, and he sells the milk from his cow, and he goes around the neighborhood selling it, and he comes back to the farm after he's been away for a day or two on a selling mission, and he's greeted by his wife and his daughter and his grandchildren. And we can hear the wife, who's very cynical about his pretensions and very practical and down to earth. She particularly is objecting to the fact that he, Tevye, has brought a book for his rather intellectual daughter. Yeah. We'll hear all of that, and grandchildren clamoring as well, as we listen to this for just a minute or so.
Nur in die Kinderlach, was machen die Kinderlach?
Sehnsen!
Oi, oi, triss, Mann! Sehne, Peter! Oi, gewalt, gewalt, gewalt! Was machen wir für Säume? Schläumele, Sehne, einiglich, meine Teure! Komm rein! Ei, Milch, ich kann noch heien! Für dich haben wir aber gebracht, aber tun es nicht. A Bichlach.
A Bichl?
Ja,
a Bichl. Verdammt, Tante. Bichlach, Schmichlach. Wo ist euch ein Bichlach, wo ist?
Golde Brüder, wir haben doch etwas geschmissen, als am anderen Geschäften mischt sich nicht. Wir suchen mir im Perek. Scheli, Scheloch, Scheloch, Scheli. Deins ist meins, meins ist deins.
No. Lass mal schon gehen essen. Kim essen, Kim. Ist Chavade hingerig, alle Weich zu liegen.
Auf recht, Mama. Bis
He says to his daughter, I have brought you a book. And the wife says, Bichele, was dacht, was tega Bichele, Bichele, Schmichele. What use is a book? Mm. She's mocking him for it. Mm-hmm. But he justifies it, and he gives it to his daughter, and she's very pleased to have it.
Yeah, and then that book comes back to bite him in the rear end because his daughter uses it to relate to this Gentile boy that she falls in love with. And then all of a sudden, he's not sure what the worth of books is after a while.
Is the book a novel by or stories by Gorky?
That's right. That's what I remember. That's the one that, she's sharing with
her Polish boyfriend.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Let's talk more about Tevye. Hmm. It was a tremendous success. Is the film, which we all know, is it in some sense authentically reflective of the values and of the spirit of the work of Sholem Aleichem?
Is Fiddler on the Roof or the Maurice Schwartz?
No, Fiddler on the Roof itself.
You know, I think...
And the film particularly.
Yeah. I think that the film and the musical is a brilliant piece of popular entertainment. And I think in many ways it does capture a lot of the spirit of Sholem Aleichem. I mean, one of the remarkable things about it is they were able to capture and synthesize the stories around three separate daughters in the musical. And that's no mean feat. The Maurice Schwartz film we saw only uses one daughter, Chava.
True.
So that's remarkable. But I think it's a different kind of entertainment from the Sholem Aleichem stories. And the way I like to describe it is that Fiddler on the Roof is a classic comedy. There are sadness in it. There are pogroms, obviously. But in the end, all the loose ends are resolved. Tevye is coming to America in the end. Everything is okay. He accepts his daughter's intermarriage. All these things. Everything comes right in the end. In the Tevye stories, at the end of the original Tevye stories, they're a tragedy, really. It's a classic tragedy. Tevye is a Jobian figure, and by the end of those stories, he is wandering off into the wilderness. He has no idea where he's going. He's not coming to America. He's not going into Israel. He's the classic eternal wandering Jew. So that kind of depth and tragic dimension that are in the original stories is a very different kind of experience than the musical.
Yeah, it's an upending from, and originally there's a great tragedy in the breakup of the family, and of course it's all a reflection of modernity disrupting and unsettling the life of the Yiddish shtetl, standard shtetl village culture. Something else is coming along behind and beyond that, which unsettles shtetl culture much more, namely the German horde, who simply kill almost all of the Jews of Middle Europe, as we know. Mm. All the same, a great moment in that film is Tevye, played by Topol, this wonderful Israeli actor, singing If I Were a Rich Man. Here's a touch of that.
All day long I bitty bitty bum, if I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. Yeah, bitty 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 bum. If I were a bitty bitty rich, idle diddle 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 man, I'd build a big tall house with the rooms by the dozen right in the middle of the town. A fine tin roof with the real wooden floors below. There would be one long staircase just going up and one even longer coming down. And one more leading nowhere just for show. I'd fill my yard with the chicks and turkeys and geese and ducks for the town to see and hear, squawking just as noisily as they can. And each loud will land like a trumpet on the ear, as if to say, here lives a wealthy man. If I were a rich man, yabba dibba 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 dum. All day long I biddy biddy bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. Yabba dibba 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 dum. if I were a bitter, bitter rich, idle, diddle, diddle, diddle man.
Aye, aye, aye. Really wonderful stuff. And we will be directly back to Joseph Dorman. And we have not talked yet enough about the wonderful stuff one finds in his fine film about Sholem Aleichem. We'll talk about what's in the film, hear a few passages from it, the audio, that is, and examine just what overview is taken in that very insightful treatment of Sholem Aleichem, the man as well as the work. All of that to follow right after the update on this evening's news from Paula Cooper.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
Now we're back to our regular bump music rather than the Yiddish songs that we've used so far. And let us now come to the film. I've been so involved in talking about Sholem Aleichem with you, and I know that we share a great interest in and a great appreciation of his work, but we haven't talked much about this wonderful movie that you've made. I watched it only today on the DVD that was sent over, and it's really great stuff. Who are all those people?
Mm-hmm. Who are all the people in the film?
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to find the best readers of Sholem Aleichem I could find. A lot of them are professors, but they're great readers and they're great talkers.
Great talker you've got, whom I've appreciated for years reading his stuff in commentary and elsewhere, is Hillel Halkin.
Hillel Halkin is great. He is probably, there are many good translators. He's my favorite translator of Sholem Aleichem, and he's just a remarkable guy and a great talker. Knows his Sholem Aleichem and is really just thoughtful and very, very funny and smart. And that's what I was looking for. Everyone who's in the film has a very personal, passionate connection to this world and to the man. And so I think that when you set out to make a film, what you want is, especially if it's a film where it's essentially a talking head film with a lot of wonderful archival photographs and film, you want people who are passionate. And that's what film can give you. And I see the film really as a kind of series of stories being told. There are stories that are there. We hear his stories. We hear people telling stories about him. We hear people recounting, synopsizing and recounting his stories as well as just reading them directly. So it's really about storytelling about this world.
Actually, you mentioned the archival photos.
Yeah.
They were very impressive. And they are from the East European Jewish world.
That's right.
All the way from the shtetl and on into the time when things are beginning to change and Jews are showing up in the cities and showing up in the professions. But they're very evocative and wonderful photos.
Well, there are a remarkable set of there's remarkable archives out there. A lot of them
are many of them from the YIVO archive?
Yes. YIVO was a main source for me. And within that archive, there's some very interesting photographers. One of the most interesting was a man named Alter Kitsisne. And Alter Kitsisne was a Polish Jew. He was actually a writer, and he was a protege of one of the other great Yiddish writers, Isaac Leib Peretz.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to make money, I believe, to support his writing habit, he took photographs for the Jewish Daily Forward in the 20s and 30s and of the shtetl. And his specialty was really trying to photograph the shtetl as it looked, as the way it was remembered by Jewish immigrants. So he didn't want the changing shtetl. He wanted kind of the eternal shtetl. So we get these remarkable photos by him.
And remarkable people commenting on Sholem Aleichem and on his stories and on the world that he reflects. And one of the most remarkable of all is a very nice-looking woman of great dignity who turns out to be his Sholem Aleichem's granddaughter, and who turns out, I learned just today reading some related material, to be 100 years old at the moment.
Yeah, Belle Kaufman is really a remarkable, remarkable woman. She's 100 years old. When I interviewed her, she was only about 91, but she is. She has been perhaps her grandfather's greatest ambassador for the last 50 years or so, if not longer. And she's a great writer in her own right. She wrote a wonderful novel, a very popular novel, Up the Down Staircase in the 60s. And she is the last person alive to have actually personally known Sholem Aleichem. She was 5 years old when he died, and there are photos of him sitting on his lap. She called him Papa Sholem Aleichem.
Mm-hmm.
So she really is the last living link to him, and And Belle herself is a very generous, spirited woman, and I can't help feeling, like so many people I think who have met her, that in Belle's own presence you get a sense of what Shlomo Aleichem himself must have been like, his own generosity of spirit.
We've been talking about Tevye the milkman. Let's hear just a minute or so from the film in which there's further discussion of those stories and that work.
Shlomo Aleichem's family, what he called his republic, was central to his life. But his four daughters and two sons were growing up in the cosmopolitan city of Kiev, a world far removed from his own shtetl childhood. Acutely aware of the growing distance between them, Shlomo Aleichem would invent a new literary character, Tevye the Dairyman. Like the author himself, Tevye was a man with many daughters. Over the next 20 years, he would return to Tevye in story after story, using him to explore his own conflicts and those of the changing Jewish world.
Many are the thoughts in a man's heart, but the counsel of the Lord shall prevail. Isn't that what it says in the Bible? I don't have to spell it out for you, Pan Shalom Aleichem, but in ordinary language that isn't plain Yiddish, it means that the best horse can do with a whipping and the cleverest man with advice. When God decides to punish a man, he begins by removing his brains. How many times have I said to myself, Tevye, you jackass, would you ever have been taken for such a ride if you weren't the big fool you are?
You know, Tevye, what's remarkable about Tevye is, it was, as we say in the film, it was a series of stories that were written over 20 years. And as Hillel Halkin says, there may not be another such, because it becomes a novel in the end, there may not be another such novel in existence. And when Shlomo Aleichem first started writing about Tevye, he was writing about, he lived in Kiev, and he would summer in this place called Boyarka outside Kiev, and he met a man, a Tevye figure, who he based the stories on. But in the earliest stories, he's really kind of gently mocking Tevye, gently, but still mocking him. Over time, he really came to identify with Tevye, as we know, or as we see in the stories and in the musical. And Tevye deepens and deepens and deepens. And what starts out as a story where we are looking at Tevye, ends up being a set of stories in which Tevye is the absolute center, the moral center of our universe. And we watch the changing Jewish world through Tevye's eyes. And he's a remarkable, remarkable character who just deepens over time.
Let's talk about another famous character, much beloved, I think, by the readers of Shlomo Aleichem, namely Menachem Mendel, the Schnorrer.
Yeah. Well, Menachem Mendel, like Tevye, was actually had large parts of Shlomo Aleichem inside him. Yeah. So did Tevye. Shlomo Aleichem, when he was a young man, inherited his father-in-law's fortune while he married a very wealthy young girl. And he played the stock market. He thought he was playing the stock market at the same time he was becoming a Yiddish writer, and was hoping that he would use the money not only he had inherited, but that he would earn with his speculation to really fuel a new Yiddish literature. Of course, in a very short period of time, he turned out to be a disastrous businessman, and he lost it all. But out of that came his first great character, Menachem Mendel, who is a speculator like Shlomo Aleichem, an equally bad businessman, but without his self-awareness. He's the classic Jewish Luftmensch, the man who lives
exactly
on and in the air. And he wove these remarkable stories, and they were his first
with
great,
a very
great
cynical
success.
Wife.
With a very cynical wife, because she realizes what a fool she has for a husband. And she's stuck back at home with the kids. She's forced to try to keep their family around while he's off gallivanting around the world.
Here are a few minutes from the film dealing with Menachem Mendel and Shaina Shendel, his wife.
What's interesting about Menachem Mendel, about the Menachem Mendel stories, is they're not only about Menachem Mendel. Right, it's a great epistolary novel. It's a series of letters between Menachem Mendel and his wife, Shaina Shendel. And it's the juxtaposition between Menachem Mendel and Shaina Shendel, which actually tells more of the story than Menachem Mendel himself.
To my dear, learned, and illustrious husband, Menachem Mendel, may your light shine. First, we're all well, thank God. second, my dear husband, I pronounce you a certified lunatic. You, who happen to have, should she still be alive when you read this, a wife who is up all day and all night with your children. You're throwing rubles away like last week's noodles. I wasn't raised in a home where we bought and sold air. From air, you catch cold, my mother says. Tell Odessa where it can go, and come home to Kozrilivka. As I wish my enemies an early death, so I am, from the bottom of my heart, your truly faithful wife, Shana Shandel.
This book is really a chilling portrait of the male and female world, two separate domains, so separate that they speak two different languages. His letters are extremely upbeat, full of new terms that he has picked up on the street. He's always showing off his technical mastery, which of course isn't technical, it's only verbal. He has no idea what the words mean, but he's learned the lingo. Her language is acerbic, critical, full of proverbs from her mother. And all of these sayings boil down to the same thing. A kreppel in cholim is a cholim und nicht kein kreppel. When you dream of kreplach, it's only a dream. It's not the kreplach. Get back to reality.
To my wise, esteemed, and virtuous wife, Shana Shandel, may you have a long life. In short, I'm now in real estate. Why real estate? Because it's
to
all the rage.
To my dear, learned,
the first
and illustrious husband, Menachem Mendel, you're a dunce
mortgage.
To think that it's then written in the stars that Menachem Mendel has to be rich.
It's
also,
no occupation.
Also, I'm having trouble
you.
With my teeth.
I now
They're
see, my dear wife, that lumber is not for me. What am I doing now? Sugar mills.
That's my mother will make you rue the day you were born if a kopeck of it is missing. I suppose I should make my peace with the fact that life has it in for me.
Kozrilivka is dying. It cannot sustain itself anymore. But the women can't leave. They are rooted to that place, and they will fight to their last breath.
My mother, bless her, had...
What are the men doing? They're off dreaming their implausible dreams.
Jackpot. I'm talking 10 million rubles.
It's an irreconcilable conflict. And even though they are writing letters to each other, they're never really communicating.
Give me Kozrilivka anytime.
The sky's
you
the limit.
You were born a
That's
sucker, and a
gold,
sucker you'll always be.
Will soon hit record
I
highs.
I am, from the bottom of my heart, your truly faithful wife, Shana Shandel.
That's wonderfully woven together.
Yeah, they're, I should mention the actors I had as Menachem Mendel, Jason Kravitz, and as Shana Shandel, Rachel Dratch of Saturday Night Live. Tevye earlier on was Peter Rieger, and the narrator is Alan Rosenberg.
We're about to go to some commercials, but before we do, let's make very clear that this film is about to premiere in Chicago.
That's correct.
This Friday, is it?
That's right. It opens this Friday, both at the Music Box on North Southport in Chicago and at the Landmark Renaissance Place Cinema in Highland Park. And I'm going to be appearing at both theaters on Friday and Saturday night. I'll be at the Music Box on Friday at the 7:20 show and doing Q&A. I'll be at the Music Box on Saturday, the earlier show at 5 o'clock, and then at the Renaissance Place, I'm going to be at the 4:45 show on Friday and the 7 o'clock show on Saturday
night. Speaking of Q&A, it is time for us to invite telephone calls. We're about to pause for a quick round of messages, and then I trust onto the calls. The lines are now open. The number, of course, 312-591-7200, 312-591-7200. If you want to raise a question or offer a thought, get in there very quickly because we have only a few minutes to go. 312-591-7200.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
And we will go directly to the phones. 312-591-7200 is the number. And here is the first caller. Good evening.
Good evening. Regarding Balagola.
Yeah, I got that wrong, I think.
A little bit. You probably recognize Balabos.
Which is boss.
No, Balabos is the master of the house.
Yeah.
And that's a Hebrew Hebrew wording incorporated into Yiddish. Baal, I looked it up in the dictionary so I could read it to you directly, is to possess, to marry, owner, or husband. Mm. So in Hebrew, Baali would be my husband. Baal Habayis, which in Yiddish becomes Baal Habos, is the homeowner, master of the house. Mm-hmm. Baal Agola is a driver. He's the owner of a wagon.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Hashanim dankach.
Hashanim dank to Eichbaden.
Thank you. 312-591-7200, the number. And we're ready for more calls if you want to get them in. And also, of course, email is possible wherever you are if you want to reach us via email. If you're listening on the internet, particularly the number, or rather the address, extension 720 at WGNradio.com. You've got a broad interest in literature, undoubtedly, and you probably read fairly widely, if only in translation, other Yiddish authors.
Yeah, one of the things that is very sad, it's an accident of history, is that not just Shlomo Aleichem, but a whole 100-year history of Yiddish literature that he and people like S.Y. Abramovich, known as Mendel Mocher Sforim, Isaac Lee Peretz, I mentioned, they're the three classic Yiddish authors, but they inaugurated a whole history of Yiddish literature. The most famous, of course, is Isaac Bashevis Singer. That's who we all know, the Nobel Prize winner. But there are people like Peretz Markish and Dovid Bergelson and Itzhak Manger. There are just a remarkable number of great writers who wrote in Yiddish who have now been translated.
But Singer, of course, had a better purchase on translation. He had a son who helped to translate so that they both translated his stuff into English. And he, of course, was resident for most of his career in the United States.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, I think many Yiddish writers, there's a famous Cynthia Ozick story called Envy or Yiddish in America, which is sort of loosely based on the envy that other Yiddish writers who were going unnoticed essentially had for Singer, who had gotten such wide renown.
Well, and he got the Nobel Prize. For
That's right. Yeah, you can't do much better than that.
The only one who got the only Yiddish writer ever to get
That's
the Nobel
right.
Prize.
Right.
How do you estimate Singer? How would you compare him to Shlomo Aleichem?
I mean, I think Singer is a great writer. I think he's a very different writer than Shlomo Aleichem. Singer is a fantasist. His stuff is very much, they're fantasies about the shtetl. Whereas Shlomo Aleichem, really, his stuff, his stories were really based in the here and now, the everyday realities of life. He was very much a realist, and that was his forte. So they're very different writers from very, you know, with very different aims in mind.
What do Shlomo Aleichem and Henry James have in common?
Wow, you ask the tough ones, don't
I
you?
I learned it from watching your film.
Ah. You've got an answer in mind here for this?
Yeah, it's obvious once you make the point.
Oh. I'll take my stab and then you can tell me what you think. I think that they're psychological masters, among other things. Shlomo Aleichem's stories are enormously psychologically acute. Of course, the difference is, as we mentioned earlier, Shlomo Aleichem was really he excelled at the monologue form, whereas Henry James is a more classic novelist.
And he, Shlomo Aleichem, is dealing basically with plain folks. And, of course, Henry James is dealing with the elevated people of at least considerable wealth.
Right.
But what I had in mind is something quite simpler. They both were well-established writers who were much respected for their work, and they both wrote plays which failed in New York.
That's correct, yeah. Shlomo Aleichem, when he arrives in New York the first time, he came here twice and ultimately died here. But when he came here in 1906, he was the greatest Yiddish writer in the world, the greatest Jewish writer in the world. His fame was spread across the Atlantic, both sides of the Atlantic, and he fully expected that in what was then a very thriving American Jewish community with a remarkably energetic Yiddish theater, that he would become the great playwright, the great Yiddish playwright, and that wealth awaited him here, finally, the wealth that had eluded him or that he had lost in the old world. And he, what ended up happening, people were the two great Yiddish impresarios of the day, Jacob Adler, the father of Stella Adler, who taught Marlon Brando, and Boris Tomaszewski, the grandfather of Michael Tilson Thomas, were the two great impresarios. And the only way to please them was to give them each a play that would both, and they would each premiere on the exact same night, and Shlomo Aleichem would run from one theater to the next, which he did. And of course, they turned out to be terrible, terrible flops. He was savaged in the press, and that was essentially the end of his playwriting
career. Were they deservedly floppy, or was there some good content in them?
You know,
I've never read them.
I have not read them either. But from what I understand, it was, let's face it, the Yiddish theater at that point was not exactly. I mean, there were better plays and worse plays, but there was a lot of very mediocre stuff going on. It had nothing to do with the content. It had to do with the fact that there were so many different interests within the American Jewish community, and he didn't fit into those interests. For instance, Abe Kahn, who is the socialist editor of the Jewish Daily Forward, thought the theater should be a place for educating people in politics and socialism. Orthodox Jews wanted certain moral virtues upheld. Shlomo Aleichem was an artist. He wasn't interested in propagandizing. And the Yiddish theater, because it was a place so much for that, ended up getting savaged very unfairly. I think
I got Henry James's theatrical failure wrong. It happened in London rather than in New York. But it was a great failure.
It was a great failure.
And it hurt him a great deal, as obviously Shalom Aleichem was very much hurt by his failure on Second Avenue.
Yeah, he was the last thing he expected, I think.
He dies rather young.
He dies in 1916 at 57.
Yeah.
He had diabetes and tuberculosis, a whole host of diseases.
That's what he has in common, however, with Charles Dickens, who also died young. But just like Charles Dickens, he recoups his fortune by doing lecture tours around the United States.
That's right. Shlomo Aleichem was, by all accounts, a remarkable reader of his own work. Mm-hmm. And he was, I mean, he really was. He had a fame somewhat like Frank Sinatra. I mean, he had young girls swooning at his feet, yeah, I think, when he would read from town to town.
We're virtually out of time, but do please repeat the dates for the showings and for your appearances at the two theaters.
Sure. The film is going to be at the Music Box in Chicago and the Landmark Renaissance Place, and I'm going to be there at the Renaissance Place for the 4:45 show on Friday night, and then I'll go to the 7:20 show at the Music Box on Friday night, and on Saturday night it gets reversed. I'll be at the 5 o'clock show at the Music Box and the 7 p.m. show at the Renaissance Place.
And I can add that this is a wonderful film because I spent a wonderful afternoon watching it in my office on a DVD.
Thank you very much.
And so with that, we bring the program to an end with thanks to Joseph Dorman, not merely for his appearance tonight, but for this fine film that he's made available for all of us. And we will be back again tomorrow for a full two-hour program with Ben Ginsberg, a professor who pleases me mightily because he, as do I, is rather disabused with the American University, which he thinks has been ill-used. And indeed, he titles his new book, The Fall of the Faculty, The Rise of the All-Administrative University. That tomorrow at 10. Until then, thanks to all for listening and a most cordial good night.